They are among the tiniest creatures on the planet. But microbes are vital for maintaining the health of the Earth's plants and creatures, including us. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. According to our guests, a pair of husband and wife scientists, microbes have the power to revolutionize agriculture and our personal health as well. And we'll talk about how, and we will welcome your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. Very happy to have with us Ann Biclay, biologist and environmental planner, and David Montgomery, professor of geomorphology at the University of Washington and a 2008 MacArthur Fellow. They are co-authors of The Hidden Half of Nature, The Microbial Roots of Life and Health. And we are very happy to have them join us very early in the morning from the West Coast. Ann, good morning.
Good morning.
And David, good morning to you.
Good morning, Joy.
It's good to have you both with us. Well, let me just start with a definition. David, what is a microbe?
Well, you know, it's a life form that's too small to see. That's the title of the book, The Hidden Half of Nature. It's the part that we don't really recognize around us, simply because they're too small for our native senses to actually engage with.
Yeah, they are very small, but they are what? They are bacteria? They are more than that, Anne?
Yeah, that's right. There's bacteria. There's something called an archaea, which is a bacteria-like thing. Biologists thought for a long time that archaea were bacteria, but that turned out not to be the case. But also it includes fungi, mushrooms, protists, which are amoeba-type things, and viruses. Although viruses are not technically considered alive, they're classified as a microbe.
Mm-hmm. And, David, we have for a long time misunderstood microbes. We considered them a threat.
Yeah, and before we knew they were a threat, we thought they were sort of idle curiosities. The guy who discovered them sort of wondered how something so small could actually do anything that might matter to anybody or actually do anything that might influence the larger world that we live in and know. And then in the 19th century, we discovered that particular microbes were responsible for particular diseases, the rise of the germ theory of disease, which really sort of cast microbes in the role of, you know, a very evil role of, you know, as threats to our health, to threats to the health of our crops and to other plants and animals. And that was the lens that we looked at microbes through up until fairly recently, the last several decades, where new technologies gave us new windows into looking at the sort of complex dynamics of microbial ecology and the roles of, you know, the vast majority of the microbes that are not pests and pathogens started to come into view, and we're starting to see now just how absolutely essential certain beneficial or commensal microbes are to the health of both plants and people.
Yeah, and how important are they?
Well, it's some of the very basic defense mechanisms in the botanical world and some of the very basic mechanisms by which your immune system work turn out to have evolved to depend on partnerships, symbioses with beneficial microbial life. It's really hardwired into some of our very basic defensive systems that beneficial microbes be present. And so we're in many ways today suffering from the absence of the beneficial microbes that formerly worked as our, you know, sort of secret, silent, microscopic partners in the grand task of keeping us all healthy and alive.
I read something in the book that caught my eye. It was, let me see, you are not what you eat, you are what your microbes eat.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And the reason for that is deep down at the end of our digestive tract in our little loved colon, there is a whole lot of really neat stuff going on. It turns out we don't actually have all the enzymes that we need to digest plant foods in particular. So they pass on, we send them down the hatch, they land in the stomach, and they get somewhat dissolved. They pass through the small intestine, not really getting absorbed, and then they land in the colon, and that's where billions and billions of microbes literally are fermenting these plant foods. And what's really cool about it is we end up benefiting hugely from their waste products, which are not, it's really kind of a misnomer that they're waste products, but because they come out of the so-called, you know, back end of a microbe, although technically they don't really have that, we call them a waste product, but in our bodies they are absolutely medicinal type compounds. And three in particular, there's three short chain fatty acids, butyrate, acetate, and propionate. And those turn out to have a huge influence, not only right there in our colon, but throughout our bodies as well.
Well, I want to also get to your story and how you came to be researching this. And it started with Anne, you wanting a garden at your at the place where you live.
Yeah. That's right. I had some bad garden lust when we first moved to Seattle, and it would take a few years before we found a place of our own and started a garden. But the real problem was that we wanted a garden so bad we really should have looked at our soil a little more closely. We didn't until sort of the 11th hour when we had hundreds of plants scattered across our lot, and this is just a modest city lot in the middle of Seattle. And we begin digging holes and find out our soil is really not so great. And my gut told me I had done a fair bit of gardening in places where we had rented, and my gut told me the soil could really benefit from some organic matter. We'd busted our budget, though. So I began looking around our neighborhood and laying my hands on every sort of free or super cheap organic matter that I could find. So that ranged from coffee grounds from our local coffee house. We had a neighbor on the corner who has these fantastic oak leaves, and I hauled an awful lot of those home. And then also there were arborists from time to time in the neighborhood, and they were looking to get rid of their wood chips because they didn't want to pay to drive to the dump and dump them in the dump. So I said, why don't you put them in our driveway? And therein sort of lay sort of the whole revitalization and rejuvenation of our soil. It didn't happen overnight, but by the next season after laying all of this stuff on the beds, I didn't dig it in, just laid it on the top. I mixed it up before I laid it on the top, and so I had all these various sort of mulch mixes that I was experimenting with. And that seemed to be the key to reviving the microbial life in our soil.
Mm-hmm.
And
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I'm wondering why the dirt was dead, as you describe it.
Well, we bought a house that was built in 1918, and let's just say the Osterbergs, who had built our house, were not gardeners. We had a ratty old lawn that I would even sort of hesitate to call lawn. It was mostly those gnarly kind of dandelions with the stickers on.
Yeah, I know what that looks like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it also had to do with the geologic history in Seattle. We had been, of course, steamrolled by glaciers thousands of years ago, and that led to compacting the soil. And then as Seattle was urbanized and houses were built, a lot of the topsoil was scraped off, and in our case it got sort of piled and all mixed up in this other part of the lot. And so there was sort of a human reason that our soil wasn't so great, and there was a geologic reason that our soil wasn't so great.
Yeah. And so, David, we have just a minute before a newscast. That's when you started discovering how critical the microbe was to the health of the soil.
Yeah, you know, it took about 3 to 5 years, and we started to notice that the soil quality was improving dramatically. And I had just written a previous book on how farming practices had destroyed soils in regions around the world, and that I was really impressed with how Anne was running that long historical experiment in reverse right in our own yard and restoring soils far faster than nature tends to make them. And that really led us to start wondering, well, what's behind all this? And the restoration of the microbial life in the yard really served as the foundation for the recovery of the life within the larger life within the soil, the rebuilding of the soil itself, and ultimately the blossoming of life above ground, both the plants and animal life that came back to the yard, surprisingly, in pretty much the same order
that life
evolved on Earth.
Let me jump in because we'll check news and then we'll continue talking about the importance of the microbe after the news. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about microbes and their role in the health of humans and the planet. And we are welcoming your thoughts and your questions for our guests. They are a husband and wife team of scientists. And we wonder if you have had firsthand experience of microbes' beneficial effects on our health, or whether you actively cultivate a healthy, helpful environment for microbes in your garden. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guests are the co-authors of The Hidden Half of Nature, The Microbial Roots of Life and Health. Anne Beclay is a biologist and environmental planner, and David Montgomery is a professor of geomorphology at the University of Washington. They join us from Seattle. And Anne, I wanted to next get into your own discoveries of the importance of microbes in our health, because You developed cancer. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it was in about 2011, and I got the phone call that you never ever want to get from a doctor, and I learned that I had stage 2 cervical cancer, and this was a huge shock, in part because we were maybe halfway through writing the book and the microbial world, at least in the garden and outside, had been pretty warm and fuzzy and wonderful, and all of a sudden it wasn't that way at all anymore. And my particular cancer was caused by a microbe, no less by a virus. And so I was sort of whiplashed by all of this news. And it was in the process of regaining my health that we began to really see the duality of the microbial world, because we had just been through this remarkable experience with our garden, and then on the flip side, a microbe had made me sick, and had the cancer continued to go undetected, it would have killed me. So there was a lot of pause for thought there for you know, some number of months.
Yeah, but did the role of healthy microbes help in your fight?
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. You know, I became very even more curious, but in a different way about microbes. Because after getting over the initial cancer shock, realized, let's look into this a little further, and that's when we really delve deep into the human microbiome. And so this was in about 2012, and the microbiome, for any of your listeners who may not know, it's just the collection of microbiota that are indigenous to the human body, on us and in us, and by far more of them help than harm us. And so this is what it sort of whiplashed me back the other way. It's like, more help us than harm us, but there are a few that harm us. And in looking into this, as David had talked about at the beginning of the show, these indigenous communities of microbes, when it comes to our immune system, are hugely helpful. They tee up certain types of immune cells in our bodies. And so initially when I talked about what goes on down in our colons with our microbes, you really want to be feeding these beneficial communities because you want them. You don't want any of this crosstalk between your microbiota and your immune system to get scrambled. You want there to be really clear communication because sometimes there are pathogens or there are cancer cells or there are various other threats going on. And so you want your immune system to be able to respond to that as well as it can. And so I came to see my health sort of as a way of how do I promote what my body already knows how to do. So that's when we took a big sort of turn down a different way of eating as well and really began to think about feeding our microbiome. And that meant a lot more plant foods in our diet than we had been eating.
Yeah, so let's talk a little, how do we cultivate these healthy microbes in our own bodies?
Yeah, well, from the wonderful botanical world, if you think about out in the garden and in the soil, I was laying all this mulch on the beds, and the microbes were along with other things, were breaking that down and just gobbling it up. And it turns out we kind of have this version of an inner garden in our bodies, and it needs mulch just as much as the garden outside. And that mulch comes in the form of what we're putting on the dinner table. And so for us, we began to explore the huge abundance and variety of the edible part of the botanical world. So you think that's anything, you know, from a plant root to a shoot to a stem to a leaf to a fruit to a vegetable to a seed or a grain. And when you think about it, there are a lot of things to eat in the plant world.
Yeah. David, do you want to add to this?
Yeah, well, the key really is to try and in both the botanical, I think, and the human world to cultivate and feed the beneficial microbes, and the common element there really is that the sort of slow to break down complex organic molecules, complex carbohydrates, what your doctor would call fiber in terms of one's diet, turn out to be the types of things that really feed. Nourish the beneficial microbes in people. And that's also, if you think about it, what provides sort of long-term stable nutrition in the botanical world, in the sense that organic matter is full of the micronutrients that plants need to grow for the simple reason that they used to be things that were already alive. And if you look at the bulk chemistry of rocks, there's, and I'm a geologist, so I'm sort of prone to thinking about that, not much in the way of those micronutrients. That's why they're called micronutrients. And the whole process of getting nutrients out of the mineral part of the world and into the biological part of the world across the threshold from geology into biology is in many ways a process of refining those sort of relatively rare elements and concentrating them into organic matter. So organic matter in the soil is actually a very rich source of a lot of the elements that plants need to grow and be healthy. And so there's this common element in terms of both worlds, botanical and human health, that, as Anne was saying, mulching the soil, getting organic matter, and the right kind of organic matter, fiber to feed the fiber fermenters in people, and complex organic molecules to break down slowly and nourish plants in the soil as well. So there's real parallels between these two worlds in terms of how the beneficial microbes really need to foster their health so they can in turn foster the health of our crops and ourselves.
David Montgomery and Anne Beclay are co-authors of The Hidden Half of Nature, The Microbial Roots of Life and Health. And we are talking about the role of the microbe, their role in health of us and the health of our gardens and the planet in general. And we're welcoming your questions. 1-800-642-1234 or your experiences. Do you have experience of the microbes' beneficial effect on our health or on the health of your garden? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And we do have callers, so let's go to Maddie in Wapaka first. Hello, Maddie.
Hello. I would like their opinion on genetically modified food. It's my understanding that genetically modified corn kills bugs that eat it instantly. And I'd also like their opinion on the importance of eating a variety of nuts as part of that.
All right, well, let's start with the genetically modified foods, maybe with the corn example as one. David, what is the effect of that on our bodies?
Well, you know, I think that the big possible effects that have been greatly overlooked are the potential secondary effects of what the herbicides that are used in conjunction with genetically modified corn actually do to the microbial life, both in the soil and then in whatever eats things that has those herbicides on them. So I think that the big overlooked part of that connection has greatly been what is the potential for those kind of secondary effects to actually disrupt the microbiomes in plants and people. And I think that the science on that is pointing to some interesting connections, and some there's studies that have shown some big differences, others that have claimed smaller differences. And I think that the real story there is sort of yet to come out.
Mm-hmm. And what about, should we be eating nuts?
Well, yeah, sure. If you think about what part of a plant nuts came from, they're a seed. They're a seed of some sort. And they're packed with all kinds of nutrients. There's some really good kinds of fats in nuts. There's some protein, and there's some fiber as well. You know, perhaps not as much fiber as you might find in the green leafy part of a plant, but certainly there's some fiber in a nut. And nuts are a great thing to eat.
Yeah. Let's go next to Rachel in Green Bay. Hello, Rachel.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. What an interesting show. I'm wondering if the guest can talk about the importance of eating or drinking fermented foods. I've been brewing my own kombucha, which is a fermented tea, trying to rebuild my microbiome because I was treated for acne with antibiotics, three different antibiotics back in college. And since then, I've struggled with depression and anxiety, so I'm wondering if the guest can talk about the gut-brain connection and the importance of ingesting fermented food and drink.
Oh, interesting. All right. That went a different direction than I thought. Is there a gut-brain connection?
That was one of the things in looking into this whole microbiome literature and connections with health that really surprised me, because there is solid evidence for a connection between sort of the depression and the gut microbiota. And, you know, I'm a geologist, and as a biologist who studies sort of, you know, the more familiar part of nature, these kind of connections to us were part of the surprising connections that really led us to try and dig deep into the literature that scientists who specialize in the microbiome have been uncovering in the last few decades. And this potential disruption of the microbiome from, you know, major courses of antibiotics, which I've had, and it's not to slam antibiotics, they've saved both Anne and my life in the past, but the disruption that they can cause to the microbiome does motivate the question of what could you do to possibly reseed and repopulate a healthy microbiome, and what can you do to maintain it? And it's worth thinking about the sort of the two different aspects of both probiotics and prebiotics in that regard, in the sense of probiotics, like the kind of things that the caller was mentioning, are an idea for trying to help repopulate your microbiome, and prebiotics are the things that Anne was talking about in terms of diet, and a fiber-rich diet in particular, to support a healthy microbiome once it's been reestablished. And there's been a number of studies that have looked at the effectiveness of probiotics and you know, they're very effective treatments for certain things. But again, I think that the science is just starting to unfold in terms of, you know, which kinds of dietary inputs for probiotics lead to which kinds of outcomes. But it's this sort of new way that's that way of thinking about how to support one's microbiome is starting to be, I think, very much supported by the evidence of the mechanisms through which how the microbiome does influence health, of which connections to things like depression are a surprising connection, but that it looks like there's a real connection there.
Yeah. Anne?
Yeah, what's really interesting is that microbiome scientists have looked at one neurotransmitter in particular called serotonin, and it used to be thought that serotonin was only made in the brain only made in the brain, and then it was discovered, some is made in the gut. Well, as microbiome researchers have looked more closely at this, it turns out there is more serotonin most likely made in the gut than in the brain. And so you ask, getting back to the question of, well, who's living in our guts? You certainly want those communities then that are capable of producing serotonin to be well-fed and cared for if they're producing such an important compound. And the caller had asked about, mentioned kombucha, and there has been, you know, studies back and forth that have said, well, just ingesting live bacteria in fermented foods, well, that can't possibly do much because the numbers that are in a glass of kombucha, say, or a yogurt or sauerkraut or what have you, just couldn't possibly make any sort of difference. And yet, because one thought was, well, they never make it clear down, clear through your system. And yet, studies have shown that they do indeed make it clear through the system. And I think, as Dave said, there's probably still more research to be done on what it is we're taking in and exactly what those effects are. But we have both started eating more fermented foods, and it's one of those things, it's not going to do you any harm, and if it might possibly do you some good, then it's a practice you might want to start doing.
Let's take a call from Kyle in Milwaukee now. Hi, Kyle.
Hi, Joy. Thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering if your guest is familiar with the work of Paul Steinmetz and his work with mushroom mycelium in the soil and what it has to do with, like, nutrients transfer. So that's kind of just the guy, Paul Steinmetz. If you know anything about him, I'd be happy to hear.
I'm sorry. We have just a couple of minutes. Was that Anne that was jumping in?
That was, mm-hmm. Yes. Paul is a fantastic guy. He is Mr. Mushroom, and if anybody wants to know anything about mushrooms, go to him. And what's very interesting about the fungi is they are this extensive network of underground conduits, and they are capturing nutrients in one part of the soil, and they are shunting those to a plant's roots, and in exchange, a plant root is supplying the fungi with carbohydrates made through photosynthesis. It's just an amazing underground network beneath our feet, and it's thought that the mycelium in the soil, I believe there was a place in Oregon where they found the largest fungi, they believe, on the planet. It's acres and acres, acres and acres in its size. So there is a whole lot to the fungal world that is a part of the microbiome as well.
We're going to need to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will continue talking about the importance of microbes. Our guest scientists say that we have misunderstood microbes for centuries. In many cases, we treated them exclusively as threats, when in reality, some microbes, bacteria, viruses, fungi, are critical for our well-being. We are discussing how and why, and we're welcoming your questions about how we can maintain healthy microbes in our bodies and in our gardens. 1-800-642-1255. 1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. We'll check news and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about microbes with the co-authors of the new book, The Hidden Half of Nature, The Microbial Roots of Life and Health. Our guests, a husband and wife team of scientists, say that microbes are vital for maintaining the health of the Earth's plants and animals, including us. They say microbes have the power to revolutionize agriculture and our personal health as well. And we're talking about how and why and welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guests are Anne Baclay, biologist and environmental planner, and David Montgomery, professor of geomorphology at the University of Washington and a 2008 MacArthur Fellow. Just to kind of reset a little bit, in the opening of your book, David, you say that we are living through a scientific revolution as illuminating as the discovery that Earth orbits the sun. Boy, it's that revolutionary, huh?
You know, I think it is. It's, you know, the Copernican Revolution they referred to there changed our view of humanity's relationship with the universe, sort of where we sat in the grand scheme of things. And I think that what's going on with our view of the microbial world is parallel in the sense that it's reframing our view of our connection and relationship to nature herself, and our view of the way that our own bodies actually function. It's this idea that microbial life is an integral part of us, that we're not simply embedded in nature, but that she's deeply embedded within us, really is sort of a different way to frame our view to the world around us. And in that sense, I think that parallel is actually pretty good. You don't get to live through too many scientific revolutions. The last sort of really big one in my field was plate tectonics, which was, you know, back in the 1950s and early 60s, that over the course of a decade and a half really changed the way we think about geology. I think biology is going through a parallel one now with this microbiome revolution in terms of all the functions and roles that microbes play in the health and mechanics of larger organisms like ourselves.
And one of the discoveries, Anne, that you made in this research, your microbe research, is this parallel, this connection between the roots of plants and the guts of animals.
Yeah, that was one of the, as we were looking into the role of microbial life in nourishing plants in the garden, and then as Anne looked into the role of microbial life in our gut in terms of supporting our immune system and nourishing us, a set of parallels emerged in terms of the way that something we can call exudates, the sugars that plants leak out of their roots, and the way the lining of our colon actually nourishes microbes within us. The parallel there in terms of organisms feeding and fostering microorganisms, and the degree to which communication between microbes and plants or our own bodies occurs and is important for teeing up defensive systems in plants and our own immune system, and the way that, as your earlier caller was talking about with Paul Stamets's fungi, the way that microbes facilitate the delivery of particular nutrients to plants and people, all sort of fall out in parallel. And you can think of a root and our own gut as similar systems inside out, across which partnerships between microbial life and either plants or people have developed that mutually benefit both, that are a form of symbiosis, where both partners benefit from the relationship. And when we sort of realize that these parallels in both the botanical and then the human world, we started to think, wow, this is a much grander way to reframe how we think about nature, because it's working differently than we had thought when we look at nature simply as the old sort of competition, red and tooth and claw kind of view of the world. There's this whole other style of interaction that these kind of relationships illustrate that is really expanding the way we see our relationship to nature and just how nature works.
We have several callers, but Anne, did you want to add anything?
No, I think that was fine.
Okay. Bill in Madison is with us. Hello, Bill.
Hi. I just wanted to make the observation that when my four kids were toddlers, they would help me in the garden, and they would literally eat handfuls of dirt, and they have turned out to be completely healthy, never gotten sick from that, actually no allergies or chronic health problems, but I have family members who took the traditional American route of keeping everything clean, and they have asthma, allergies, and a lot of other issues, and I'm sure there's a genetic component, but it's an observation that reinforces the old saying that, you know, God made dirt and dirt won't hurt.
I hadn't heard that one, but I often thank my my mom and dad for my not so clean upbringing because I don't have a lot of allergies and I seem to have a strong immune system. Anne, is there a connection between the dirt that we grow up with and maybe the ultra clean living of today not being so good?
Yeah, what your caller, though he may not know it, what he just sort of talked about is what's called the hygiene hypothesis. Yeah. And so this is the idea that our ultra modern lives have gotten a little too cleaned up. And there's several factors that have been looked at as ways of actually sort of countering the negative effects of a too clean environment, and that is gardening is one way. Also, interestingly, having a dog or a pet of some sort is also another thing that helps your microbiome. And then also, it turns out families with kids that are with more than one kid are helpful because it's usually, as we all know, as kids, yep, whether it's at school or home, they're pretty germy and they're exchanging germs all the time. So there is definitely something to having, you know, the right amount and the healthy kind of microbiota in your life. We don't really want to introduce pathogens, but as we know, there are far more helpful and beneficial bacteria, especially out there in the world, than there are pathogenic types. And we encounter them in their natural habitats, which is anything from the soil in your garden to your dog's fur.
Let's go to Mark in Oconomowoc. Hello, Mark. Mark, are you there? Well, no, I guess not. Mark wanted to know if fermented foods prevent food intolerances. Anyone know?
I don't know about that in particular, but there may be some kind of indirect mechanism in that if you are eating fermented foods, you're introducing, it's mostly lactobacilli or bifidobacteria. Those are the two main types that come in fermented food. And those groups of bacteria are in constant communication with our immune system, and they're helping the immune system kind of sort friend from foe, from, you know, just innocent bystander.
Let's go next to Margot in Madison. Hello, Margot.
Hi. I'm involved in the raw milk movement in Wisconsin, and one of the several reasons that people want raw milk is exactly what you're talking about now. We're aware of something that perhaps others are not, that the good bacteria in milk is a prebiotic. It creates the proper environment in the gut for good bacteria to proliferate, and it tends to eat up any minor bad bacteria. So the risks of drinking raw milk are really not great, and this is proven by all the farm kids that prospered on it over the generations, and by research in Europe on the lack of asthma in farm children because of their exposure to raw milk.
Yeah, and it's a big fight in Wisconsin to allow or not allow the sale of raw milk. David, do you have any knowledge on this?
Well, I actually think that this particular issue and the one that came up earlier in terms of kids playing in the dirt are really good examples of the ways that the recent research and discoveries about the dynamics of the microbial world and their connections to health are starting to change the way that we actually think about many of these issues. And in the botanical world, there was a parallel where back in the 1930s, when people were first looking at organic agriculture and trying to point to the connection of a life-filled soil as, you know, critical for growing healthy crops, they didn't know the mechanisms by which those connections worked. And so their views were pretty much overlooked and ignored or fought, not viewed as sort of modern science. Well, it turns out that modern science seems to be catching up with some views, and I'm more familiar with the botanical parallel in terms of life-filled soils actually do improve crop health than I am with the raw milk issue. But I think this is a very good example of exactly the kind of thing that thinking is starting to turn on based on recent discoveries.
Yeah. You know, the raw milk situation, a lot of proponents say it is very healthy for you, but the regulators are still regulating it because sometimes there are outbreaks of sicknesses at picnics, for example, if somebody was drinking raw milk there. So it goes both ways, Anne?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Joy. This is the duality of the microbial world right in front of us. The caller had mentioned that in raw milk that there are beneficial microorganisms, and that's true. But on the other hand, sometimes depending on the herd, depending on the cow, depending on how the cow's milked, pathogens can get in there, and so it's this. You know, it's this line that we're walking.
Yeah.
And what was interesting about her comment, too, is that we talked earlier.
And we have less than a minute, Anne, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. There are prebiotic benefits to non-plant foods as well.
Yeah. And I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. It's been very interesting. Thank you both very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Joy.
Thank you, Joy. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, David Montgomery and Anne Beclay are a husband-wife team of scientists, and they are the co-authors of The Hidden Half of Nature, The Microbial Roots of Life and Health. Thanks to Marika Suval and to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. Our big question is on whether or not Wisconsin should accept Syrian refugees. That's coming up next. And tomorrow we'll talk about reinventing ourselves in our older years. That's coming up tomorrow.